Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, joined by my team member, Candace Klein. We are financial advisors with Gateway Wealth Management at UBS. We're located in Charlotte, North Carolina, and can be reached at 704-362-8260. Our guests today are Josh and Tony Tarbutton of Bravo Team. They are not affiliated with UBS, and their views are their own. We're always fascinated when someone in academia is successful in transitioning from the classroom into the business world. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, Josh?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. We're glad to be here. So I'm a mechanical engineer and a soldier, joined the Army to kind of help pay for school. And I'm here with Tony. We actually met in our freshman year. We met at a small liberal arts college in Northeast Georgia. And I wanted to transfer to be an engineer, so I transferred to Georgia Tech. She stayed there. I was able to finish. I was deployed to Iraq my graduating semester. I had to come back and finish, and we had a baby in between. And then I decided to go to grad school. At the time, my advisor was teaching at Georgia Tech. He was moving to Clemson to take over the role of directing the International Center for Automotive Research at ICAR. And so we decided to sell our house and go to Clemson. And it's one of the best things that we ever did because we had the rest of our children in South Carolina and got my master's and my PhD. And then I did an industry postdoc in Charlotte in 2011. And that was really my first exposure to the Charlotte area. And we loved it. We got a house with all the wonderful things in Charlotte, pools and greenways and nice people. And it was really wonderful. And I got a job teaching in 2012 at USC. And so the postdoc ended in Charlotte, and I went and taught at the University of South Carolina for 5 years, 4.5 years. So 4 years? 4 years. And then came and was recruited to UNCC and taught there for 5.5 years. I might have my dates a little mixed up, but all mechanical engineering. My research area was in like signal systems, controls, and manufacturing, specifically in automated tool path planning and kind of looking at how do we increase the productivity of machining through novel algorithms, architectures, and using some of the new computing resources. So all mechanical engineering. And then I kind of realized that I didn't make enough money for the future. And it's funny, people say, oh, you're smart. And I said, well, if I was more intelligent, I might have figured out how money worked. And so, of course, I loved engineering and I really just wanted to do that. So then I kind of had to figure out a way to make more money than I could as a professor. And I started doing some consulting. And that led to us starting another company, which I got voted out of, and then eventually Bravo Team, which we've now been in business. This is our 8th year. I know we've hit the Inc. 5000 list 3 times and the Charlotte Fast 50 twice, and we've grown to about a little shy of 60 people.
Well, that's impressive. That's a short period of time to grow a successful startup.
It was pretty remarkable. I'm really glad I have my wife here because she's the witness to it all and the reason that I haven't lost my mind and all those things along the way.
Tony, what was it like? I imagine when you were teaching and doing the consulting, that's probably a lot of hours and life is expensive, especially if you have 4 kids like you do. So I get that. What was it like trying to support him when he was spending so much time in the classroom and consulting and then ultimately, I guess, transitioning into Bravo Team?
Okay, so I'd like to set the record straight. We got married before we had children. He just kind of said that he went out there. So our first year of marriage, he was deployed to Iraq. I was working on my master's at Georgia State in special ed. So I actually taught for the school system that I grew up in for 2 years in Gwinnett County. And so I was consumed with creating a home for my husband because when he left to Iraq, we had family housing at Georgia Tech. And then I had to move out because he had left. So anyway, since I was a student at Georgia State, but moving back, I've always been occupied with creating a home, engineering memories for the 4 kids that we homeschooled, that we agreed to homeschool through high school together. So I was very much occupied with play dates and mom's club. I knew that wherever I went, I had to find support for myself because I am responsible for my choices and for the home that I create. And so there was really no time. I mean, I was surprised he'd come home and I had stuff to do still. There was just always something to do until recently, where his youngest is now 16 and things have tapered off on the home front in many ways. So it sounds like it was busy, 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 feel like chaos a little bit. Yes, I said I was managing chaos with joy. And that was a practice I had to master.
Josh, making the transition, what sort of academic reflex did you have to unlearn? You know, you pride yourself on how fast you move as a company in designing things and bringing that timeline down for a client of yours. What academic reflex did you have to unlearn in order to move faster?
Well, if you ask people around me, they'll probably say I haven't unlearned many of the things I probably need to unlearn. I would say when you're in academia, it's very much about the human development, the mind of the engineer. You know, you're trying to create new neural networks in their brains, you know, with a curriculum and learning objectives. And so I'd say like that's very much in our DNA at Bravo Team, is putting people in circumstances where they can learn and grow. And I would say I probably staffed some of the projects wrong early on and didn't hire at a higher level for some of the stuff that we did, just because the academic in me wanted to kind of work with some people that were probably in more need of investment and mentoring for some of the projects. So just kind of level setting the right level of effort on a project. So what would happen, and the customer wouldn't suffer, we would just spend more time. And to me, it was a good investment of time because I was thinking still very much like a professor and not a business owner. And so, you know, if we didn't lose money on a project and the employee that's working on it grew and their mind expanded and we were able to grow in the work, then it was a win for me. And so it was kind of like a constant mindset of investing versus operating and running the company. So I was a mechanical engineer. I had very little financial and business training other than what I read from books and listened to other people. And so I'd say, you know, my mindset towards doing the work was more research focused, more growth in the individuals, and probably less on timeline and execution and profitability. I feel like the heart of engineering is a creative process. It can be a very artistic process. And if we try to squeeze too much out of it, it's like trying to squeeze too much out of an artist. And there's that tension between the two. I'd say the academic mind in me is always leans towards the less profitable side, because we would do the work even if a lot of us would do the work even if we didn't get paid. Obviously, we'd have to get paid and do that. But there's enough joy in the work. That part of it is a mindset that I definitely have to be aware of.
60 people on your team. How do you get everybody to mesh well together? What's been one of your biggest challenges as far as that goes?
I think in business, people can be the biggest challenge in most businesses. But I think usually it's not the people that's the problem, it's the process. And so our mindset is that if there's a problem in the business, first of all, let's assume it's not a people problem. Let's assume it's a process problem. It's very much the Army way too. The Army way is you set up your soldiers for success. And if your soldiers don't do well, it's on you. And so there's this extreme ownership mindset in the military where you as a leader have a responsibility to set everybody up for success. But managing creative work with that many people, and we have a machine shop as well. We do fabrication and machining and welding, and we do some service work in the field. And so organizing that is very challenging, but it's really organizing the creative work assembling the right people and the right teams with the right skill sets, and then managing the timeline. That is the hardest part of the business. It becomes a lot easier when you create healthy relationships with customers that already know what you can do. And so fortunately, we've finally been in business long enough where we get repeat work, and a lot of that work is a little bit less chaotic to manage. But the new work with the new customers is hard, especially for expensive projects, because there's a lot of fear associated with it, because we're often creating things that don't exist. And we're telling people, yeah, we can create this that you've never seen before. Of course we can do that. And they don't have that domain knowledge. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're not a chef and somebody's asking you to make a meal, you just have to have the right combination of things to bring to the table. And so we're better now than we used to be at that. But that is one of the hardest parts, is to manage that chaos.
How do you balance your work life with your personal life and making sure you spend time with Tony and your kids?
I want to point out something that he kind of goes over, and he's an expert in systems and signals. And I asked a friend who's an engineer, and she said, basically it's where they know that there's a solution for all. And so when it comes to managing and balancing that life work schedule, he just finds ways to connect. It's just making time. It's just dropping what you're doing and doing nothing together. And we do a lot of that together in between showing up for the things we have to when it comes to Bravo team.
Well, I think it's a lot of it's being honest about your needs and letting other people be honest about their needs. And I think it's a negotiation of resources. But Tony has been by my side since the beginning. I've accomplished a lot in my life. None of it would have gone as well as it did without all the support that she gave me. So she gave me the freedom. So it's like we kind of negotiated, you know, our needs. And then, of course, we didn't know what we were doing when we were younger. So there's a lot of anger, frustration, resentment that we had to work through. Like any relationship with another human.
We were 21 and 22 when we got married and had our first kid at 23. So we were kids still growing up. And when you realize you can't know what you can't know until you know it, then you have compassion for yourself. And I kind of wish that some things that we know now, that if we had known that there were phases you go through as a human being through life, it would have been helpful to be kinder to each other when we were not in those phases that we will eventually get to, you know, as we approach 90.
Yeah, and our childhoods, they gave us opportunities to learn resilience that a lot of other people just don't have, and we wouldn't wish it on them. But, you know, my mom died when I was 13. I didn't have a GED or a diploma when I was starting to go to school. I had to get a conditional acceptance. There's just a lot of hurdles along the way that when we were adults and we were working together, it actually seemed easier because we had each other and life was hard and we made our lives very difficult for ourselves. You know, we probably didn't need to do it like we did it, but we were like anybody else. We were just waking up and doing the best we could and reading books and listening to dreams and imagining different futures and trying to work on our emotional health and trying not to screw up our kids too much and try not to lose money and maybe it'll work out. And this year, 2025, is the first year since we've been together in our entire marriage where we've ever had any sense of like financial peace or like time. This is the first year. So we pretty much have worked since we've known each other, like pretty much 25 years, like nonstop to get to this place. And we work together. And so we get to share in the rewards together. It was worth it. And this is what we were going for. We were pulling for this future. We had a really good, probably about 8 years ago when I was voted out of the other company, very emotional time. I felt like I got hit by a truck, totally blindsided, put my whole heart into it for a whole year. And I walked away with, you know, $183. You know, I was a failure in many ways. And I'd taken a lot of time away from the kids and all this stuff. But then serendipitously, Tony found out about different ways of managing yourself through meditation and other practices, and I actually saw her change, and that's what got me into exploring different ways to manage my own ability to calm my nervous system. And so that's been a whole nother journey for us along the way. But I'd say only by really negotiating with each other what your needs are, can you even begin to like try to manage the chaos. But when two people work together, I mean, they can do so much more than they can do by themselves. And my life is just an example of that. Like everything I have is pretty much because Tony like worked with me.
So it's really that 1 + 1 is something more than 2. And based on what you're saying, it sounds like you learn things the hard way, which sometimes are the best teachers, right? The failures is, it's not a failure if you take that. I remember reading Napoleon Hill way back when, and I think what he called it was the seed of an equivalent benefit in any failure. Mm. And that's always stuck with me. So it sounds like you did not have any mentors or anything like that. You really did learn this kind of on your own the hard way for the most part. Is that fair?
Okay. So when I was exploring, what am I going to do? I convinced him to go to that Tony Robbins conference, and there was someone talking about real estate investing. And so we got into that. We attended one of those seminars, and in it, it told us how we could get unsecured financing, which was the very expensive financial products like Fundrise. Well, first of all, these 0% credit cards, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, all of that to say, we discovered another way to tap into money when banks wouldn't give you money starting off with Bravo Team. So going from that,
We do not recommend the way that we did it.
No, we didn't. It was just the only way that was available.
Yeah, to that point, I think part of the reason you brought
it up is going back to the
Was it a failure?
No. So
not a failure, because what came out of it is actually we
learned so much.
We got $70,000 of available credit, which is cash flow. And so that was like one of those things where we thought, okay, we're gonna go to this, we're gonna learn this. We bought into this program, which is really just to steal money from people. And then they sold us this terrible financial product, which was also what we paid for. And we really got taken advantage of, I think, in that scenario. But it led us to be able to have that purchasing power, which we used the cash to launch the business. And this is in 2018, because we needed to be able to do it. And it's just that managing time. So it's kind of an example where, you know, like, how do you interpret these events, right? And I think it has to do with our resilience, because you could go and say, like, I'm such an idiot. I didn't have enough money. I just dropped, you know, $1,000 on this class, and I dropped another $3,000 on this stupid financial program. And now, okay, I have $70,000 of available credit card debt, and I decided not to pay for the $25,000 upsell program. So it's like, well, am I just an idiot? You know, and then you have to reconcile that, like in your marriage, you know, it's just because you're trying to do stuff. So I think when you're trying to change your circumstances, you're susceptible to predatory people in the marketplace that will promise you your future, but they won't give it to you. And so we had to like recognize that we're really stupid in one hand, but we actually have this cash and it worked out. And so it was kind of like a constant negotiation of like, oh, I'm an idiot. I should quit. We don't know what we're doing, to like, oh, you know what? This actual good thing kind of dropped out, and we have 0% interest on $70,000. And if we can get a return on investment, we're going to do a good job.
So going back to those classes, it put our headspace in real estate investing. And at that time, Charlotte was full of houses that needed to be flipped. But instead of taking that route, it actually taught us business without having to go into real estate investing. So we saw, when you hire an engineer and they have billable hours, it's almost like having a house that is an income producing asset. Each engineer is like having another house. Oh. That, and like then listening to the podcasts of real estate investing, all of a sudden I heard them talk about tribes and how awesome these retreats were. And I knew my husband was super lonely because he was a professor and then he was a founder or owner of a company, but he had nobody to talk about the business, what he was learning, the personal issues that he had with people issues. And so I had heard about EO And I said, Josh, sounds like you really need a tribe. So I had encouraged him to look into what does Charlotte have that he could participate in. And he had made, I think he qualified to get into EOA, which is the Entrepreneur Organization Accelerator Program.
Yeah, and then they taught us about people, cash, yes, strategy, and execution. And they had learning days, and they had mentors, and the business owners in Charlotte donate their time and they help these companies grow. And that helped us out dramatically. At that time, though, I think there's another point. You know, thinking about real estate, we were just trying to say, like, what is a good use of time and energy?
Yes.
You know, like you help your customers. Like, you know, well, our question was not how do we manage wealth, but how do we get from not wealth to wealth? You know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the strategies was to go explore these ideas. And really for us, we kind of had to decide, are we going to go in this together in real estate? Or that's where I pulled back. And I said, baby, you know, like I'm an engineer. I mean, I've been in school for so long. Like I love engineering. Let's do this with engineering. And us trying to do something, anything led us to do what is pretty obvious is to do the thing that you got a PhD in. It wasn't so obvious to me. I think I give myself more credit than I deserve for some of the decisions I made, because it really took me a long time to kind of come around to the decision that was pretty obvious for other people. So I would just say, like, sometimes the most obvious thing can be the right thing for us. And that's what it was for us. Engineering, I think I was just afraid to do that. And I thought other things might have been a little bit easier. And certainly it's not been an easy way to make money, because we're designing things from scratch that don't exist. Yeah. But that's where the magic is. And, you know, I can't imagine really doing anything else. I'm loving it.
So what's nice about our relationship is that we're always kind of like exploring ideas together. And so when we're learning more about, what about real estate investing? It kind of leads to knowledge that informs us in the future. So now we actually own the building that our business is in, and it's this commercial building, and we knew exactly how to upfit it and increase its value and hold on to it. And we didn't have to go buy a bunch of dumpy houses. It was just the knowledge was priceless, and it helped inform us in our future decisions. So I wanted to bring that up because we're both educators. We homeschool our kids. We're trying to learn, and then we tell our kids in real time. As soon as we learn something, we're like, guys, we got to tell you something. This is how it works. And we just didn't know how things worked, and we figured it out together. And so that is whatever support he imagines, it's just another human who's talking
to him. Yeah, it's like having a person.
And exploring ideas together and future possibilities and potential outcomes. Anyway, so I wanted to drop the name of that book that helped me back in 2018 when I felt like I was at my wit's end, because when he was voted out, he was really upset. And it was called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself by Joe Dispenza. From taking that into my closet by myself when there was nowhere else to go because I'm in a house full of like five humans, it helped me become more aware of what I was doing that was causing my own suffering. So a lot of the peace that we are experiencing on this end is because we took the time to tune into ourselves and listen to ourselves. And that wasn't obvious, like he said. It's so simple and so available. It doesn't seem like it could be at all helpful, but it's actually the key factor in our change.
It's just about like letting go of your addiction to past emotions. And, you know, a lot of times we wake up in the morning and we have the same emotions we had the day before, these persistent negative emotions, and recognizing that you have some agency over the way you feel and the way you think, and taking that bit of ownership, it kind of enabled us to navigate the last 7 years in a totally different way than we navigated all of the previous years.
Right.
So did you read that book together? It sounds like you've both read it. Did you finish it and say, hey,
she read
Josh?
I read it, and then I'd go to the closet to try and practice, and it was super hard closing your eyes and being still in the dark by yourself. It just wasn't intuitive at
first. I didn't read it until I saw proof. She basically became a lot more emotionally healthy than me, and I really needed to level up my game to make sure I could stay in the same pace with her, you know.
How did he do, Tony? Did he step all the way up to your level?
Fantastic. We've gone to NCS at Marsha Rawls' place in Asheville's Phoenix Retreat Center. Josh Rimini had said, you guys have got to go to this NeuroChange Solutions. And it did change our life. We met Joe Dispenza's Hillary and Lindsay, and we love them. Then we went to the week-long because the people at the NeuroChange Solutions says, you guys have got to go to the week-long meditations. And so we went to Denver for the progressive, and then we went to Denver for the intensive and felt my central nervous system reset. I had no idea 37 hours in 1 week of meditating could reset your central nervous system.
And if you ask anybody that knows me, they'll tell you I have PTSD. I mean, we were mortared every week in Iraq. We medevaced almost 10% of our battalion with injuries. We supported the theater. We were in log base sites, and we supported the whole Baghdad International Airport area. And when I came home, I had a 4-month-old, and I still had to finish my bachelor's in engineering school. And so I was basically a pretty screwed up individual for a long time. And only through kind of like coming back. And two is, the business owner, you owe it to your employees and your customers to get over your problems. I feel like I kind of had to get through it. And, you know, we went to our 20-year Army reunion not long ago, and there's only a handful of people there. And you just kind of, you're aware that things could have gone different, really different for us. We've lost more soldiers to suicide than we have actually lost in the conflict due to PTSD. And I was the guy that I couldn't even sit in a tree stand for 2 hours waiting for a deer. The idea of fishing was like sitting there and just waiting for a fish to come around. It's just like, who does this? How can people enjoy this? So really, like, the entrepreneurial journey is also really tied very closely to our journey.
And just a teacher. Going to business taught us.
Yeah, you want to grow as an individual, just go buy a company and try not to screw it up, and you'll grow in character.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for your service. And yeah, there are too many soldiers walking around with PTSD, and that's maybe another topic for another day, how we can address that.
It's amazing how once you realize that you can control your mind, and you mentioned the neural pathways and create new neural pathways, I find that fascinating.
Humans are incredible.
Yeah.
Humans can heal. Humans can forgive.
And behaviors are not the human. Behaviors serve a function. It's like to escape. And that's something I learned from special ed. So if there were behaviors that were unsatisfying, I mean, it doesn't mean that the human being is not worthy of love. So that is where I felt like my special ed helped in seeing Josh as a human being who went through all of these things and is like fighting through, I mean, is building a business for our family. I mean, I'm not going to judge him when he's having not the greatest day. I will help him in whatever way I can. So that's just how it is.
And that is an ongoing journey, really.
It is ongoing.
You're talking about really trying to control your mind rather than your mind controlling you, right?
Or trying to control someone else because you don't like the way that feels.
Yeah.
Well, how do you pass that knowledge on to your employees to make sure their mental health is taken care of?
Well, I think one of the ways, being vulnerable.
The core values.
Yeah, we have core values too. Remarkable integrity, tenacious pursuit of excellence, embrace growth, own the experience, win together. I think, you know, kind of hold ourselves accountable to those things.
We have an assessment that they have access to, the 6 sites.
And, you know, we encourage people to like learn about themselves. We do the working genius, which kind of helps people identify where they like to operate in their work, and goes through wonder, invention, discernment, tenacity, enablement, and galvanizing. And it says everybody's good at 2, usually. There's 2 things people really don't like. So I don't really like enablement, but some people really do. I really don't like galvanizing people to get them on board, but I love to come up with ideas. And so you can see like where I might be the wrong person in the room if you need somebody just to enable and help things get in. We try to be aware of those things, take the Myers-Briggs. Also, there's the Wilder method, which has helped me personally a lot. Bill Wilder found a way to really help people find their instinctual drive. It's part of the psyche. You know, everybody talks about the ego. Not everybody talks about the id. That id is sort of that limbic part of your brain where you have that instinctual drive. And a lot of times, people need that part. They need that core part of their psyche in order to do hard things. And so Bill helped me find pathways to lower more intrinsic motivation so I could continue to be resilient and show up and try to do a good job by the employees. But putting in the culture is difficult because everybody has a unique experience. But I think if you can be honest about your experience and say, these are the tools that helped, we definitely do that. We encourage everybody to, you know, we find harmony by appreciating other people and knowing yourself. But a lot of times we don't know ourselves, or we judge ourselves for the things that we're not, because we're like all these things, but we're not these things. And so we don't have any value as a human. We have to apologize for our existence. And so we try to avoid that. We try to let people know that it's like, we're here together, we're here to work together, and we have value, and we can each bring what we can bring. And if we can get it right by putting the right people in the right seats, then we have harmony in the organization. If we have it wrong, it's usually because we've been a little bit dishonest about what we can do, or what other people can do, or what we should be doing. And then you have to level set, recalibrate, and try again.
I love the direction this conversation has gone. But before we get to wrapping up, I'd love to find out a little bit more about the business specifically. And when you say Bravo Team solves your biggest challenges faster, what does faster mean in practice?
Great question. So engineering, design, and development, it's like what we're talking about is we're talking about designing something usually that doesn't exist. Okay, so let's say you have a company and you make these six products and you recognize the market will take three other products, but you have to design them and produce them and you got to get them manufactured with your supply chain. Well, how do you do that? What are the right products? Who do you partner with? And so those kind of companies that might be wanting to add product to their portfolio, what Bravo Team will do is it will help them understand what they can design and how much it'll cost and how quickly they might be able to capture that part of the market. So we help people with new products, innovation. We do a lot of automation, and this is industrial robotics or integrating robotics into another workflow. Or let's say there's some manual process where it needs to be supported, or we need to add ergonomic support to something that's causing fatigue for humans. Pretty much anything that needs to be designed for making something. So most of our customers are manufacturers, and you know, they have aerospace, automotive, food and beverage. And so we are automating things. We do quite a bit of food and beverage automation. So you can just kind of imagine we're seeing a lot more machines show up in stores and a lot more automation. And I mean, just look at coffee. 10 years ago, the espresso machines were pretty manual, and now people are just pushing a couple buttons. And that's all just engineering design and development. As the market changes and can adopt new products, people are introducing those products and they need to make them. So they need machines to automate those processes to make. And Bravo Team just comes alongside the company. The reason we call ourselves Bravo Team is we're not the alpha team. We don't have to be the alpha team. We can be the support. It's also the name of SEAL Team. It's the name of one of the Special Forces teams. And it's also, you know, the Italian, bravo, bravissimo. Yeah. So it's like if the customer has a good experience and we can come in like a B team, getting the A team ready for the game, there's really a little drama and we do a good job, then they say bravo at the end. So that's kind of the naming, is kind of the experience that we try to create for the customer so they can get what they want from a development side. Reason we do it faster, and I'm taking a long time to answer your question, but we do it faster by cutting out all the steps in between. So typically, if you want to do something, you may need different disciplines. Let's say you need a mechanical engineer, you'll need an electrical, you need a computer engineer, and you need to get it made. So now you got to talk to a shop, and you get a sheet metal made, and maybe you need it painted, and what kind of paint. So there's the details of putting it all together can just be overwhelming. And so Bravo Team is just, you just need to make one call. And you just, if we tell you it can be done, then it can be done. And if we tell you when it'll be done, you can expect it to be done on that date. And so the way we do it faster is by just getting rid of all of the stuff that doesn't lead to the velocity of the work. Bravo Team, we say we move at the velocity of the work, okay? It's kind of like if you can take the next step, take the next step. And so it's kind of very Marcus Aurelius, you know, the impediment to action becomes the next action. Or it's like the obstacle is the way, the next thing is the next thing. Always be doing the next thing, always be working. We try to separate parallel paths. So we don't wait until we're done with one thing before we start something that could be started immediately. And we focus heavily on technical risk. And so if we can destroy the technical risk in a project quickly, then everyone knows the project will be successful. And sometimes you don't have to build a whole machine to answer a question. And that's the beauty of coming from academia. In true academia, you produce new knowledge. You don't necessarily produce another microwave. You produce the knowledge of a novel way of shaping electromagnetic fields that you can apply. And so we also help customers with answering questions. We also help companies do their due diligence. If they're looking at buying a company, they don't really understand the technology. We can come in and help them know where those risks are. And it can be a lot faster than them trying to do it on their own. And on sometimes too, companies, they have their own engineering processes and procedures, which can be slower than they need them to be. And so Bravo Team can come in kind of as a team on the side to jump in and get some of those things done that are on the critical timeline. So we're not pushing projects into the next fiscal year. We're helping companies nail those budgets, nail those timelines, get that technical chunk of value into the organization when they need it. And it's a lot of it is just knowing what can be done and how quickly it's possible to do that is really the domain knowledge that we can help shorten those timelines.
And often other shops don't have machining and that kind of available, so they have to outsource so much. But Bravo Team is unique because
us having the equipment as well. I mean, we have 15 3D printers, we have 4 CNC machines, we have a full shop staff. And so just even handing the work over to different companies to get done can also just totally destroy the timeline.
Okay. So you talked about how you have 4 kids. You're over the hump, so to speak, with their ages. A couple of them are off toward out of the house, maybe doing their own thing. So your time has maybe freed up a little bit, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
How are you spending your time now kind of supporting Josh? So has that changed a bit?
I basically asked him, would it be okay if I devote my energy to you? And he was like, what? This is a thing you could do? And I said, yes, everything I've ever had to be in charge of or is up, it's over. I don't have to tutor in my community anymore. I'm done serving in my HOA and I'm not interested in working for someone else. And I'm not interested in supporting anyone else. I just want to devote my energy to him, whether it's feeding him, driving him, sitting in a board meeting with him. It's all the same because we talk about it all the time. We talk about business all day, every day. And it's fascinating to me. I mean, I'm an adventurous person and just being married to Josh is an adventure in itself.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that can translate to anybody else, but yeah, for me, this is how it is.
How many podcasts have you done?
None.
This is your first.
This is my very first. This is actually by accident. Well, I couldn't find the truck keys to go to the Costco.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've been fantastic, both of you. I mean, you've built a very special business pretty quickly, you know, after all those mistakes, so to speak.
Oh, we have a saying for that. We say we're accidentally awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, because we could not have planned anything that we did. We just kept doing the next thing. And well, that's the beauty of his
and that's kind of what I was getting at earlier is if you just keep waking up and trying and not listening to all your head trash and all of the thoughts that tell you you're nothing, you're less than, you don't matter, you're not good enough, you suck, all that stuff. I mean, I imagine everybody has to deal with it. I'm my own worst critic. I'm a nasty, terrible person to myself sometimes. Just as we've grown, just realizing you have permission to exist. And sometimes we do well, and sometimes we get an opportunity to try again. And my mom used to tell me when I was a kid, and you know, she died when I was 13. So this is, you know, a little shout out to mother here, but she would say, you know, that God's mercies are new every morning, regardless of what you believe. It's just some days I'd just be like, I cannot wait to wake up tomorrow because I don't think there's any mercy left for today because today was not a good day. So, but just this idea that every day we wake up is a new day. We wake up with a brand new sky, brand new sun, brand new moon. Everything is, we have a new opportunity. And I just think if we can spend most of our days waking up like that, letting go of those emotions of the past, then we can really do good work for other people and, you know, you make money. and people can enjoy life and their contributions.
We appreciate the motivational podcast.
This has been awesome. And it's been such a nice surprise to have you join, Tony.
Oh, thank you for having me, Andrew.
Now, usually most people, you know, I get invited first and they realize that I'm married to Tony. Then they're like, hey, when is Tony? Can Tony come? Can Tony go? So.
You two seem to make a great team.
Oh, it has been fun. I asked my dad, I said, how did you feel about me getting married so young? And he said, well, you and Josh were always like partners. You guys were just partners from the very beginning. And I thought, okay, all right, I see. I agree.
Okay, well, this has been fantastic. Hopefully we can get the two of you back in for a follow-up at some point. We'd like to keep up to date with what you have going on. You're one of many. I think Charlotte's done a good job having a lot of professors leave UNCC and start successful businesses. So thank you for your contribution to the community, both of you.
Absolutely. And thank you to the community for welcoming us and even creating the possibility for us to do business here. Charlotte's been amazing to us. We love the city. We love the people. We believe that we have a very bright future together. Thanks for having us, too.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And enjoy the rest of your day and the holidays.
Thank you.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.